evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in to the program tonight. I'm glad you could make it. If you're not watching on the web stream cam, shame on you. Go to MikeMalloy.com, and there's a big banner there. It says, what does it say? Web stream? Malloy Vision? Malloy Vision. It sounds almost religious. Brad Friedman joins us from California, which is really turning into land of fruits and nuts, Brad.
Turning into?
What in the hell? I guess Carly, what's her name? Fiorina?
Fiorina, yeah.
Yeah, she, what did she spend? I've heard two reports, $40 million and $80 million to get a million votes.
Yeah, I heard something like $57 million, in a primary.
God, it's amazing. But this is what the Supreme Court unleashed. I realize this is her money, but just imagine what it's going to be like when certain corporate special interest groups decide to go after or support somebody. Oy vey. Somebody's going to make a lot of money.
Well, yeah, you know, and add to that Supreme Court decision, I don't know if you saw this, it was sort of under the radar here, the Supreme Court decision had just gutted the public financing provision that they had in Arizona, one of the few states in the country that actually had a decent public financing law in place. Mm-hmm. They've just gutted it.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday and didn't stop and take time to read it. But it's the quick understanding is what you just said, that there's no more public money.
That looks like what it is. I haven't gotten to read it either yet. I saw a news item on it. I haven't gotten to read the decision yet, but I was frankly stunned because I've spent a lot of time out there in Arizona, and I can tell you that a lot of folks really like that law and that it has allowed people who are not millionaires to be elected to office, people who would have never even run for office.
Supreme Court is making it very clear what their vision of the future of this country is.
Aggressively so. Stunningly so.
And this is what really cracks me up. All the whining and bitching from the teabag types and the Republicans, about activist Supreme Court, justices, who for some reason are always assumed to be liberals or Democrats when in fact it's always the other way around. Always. Oh well.
Because they're not, the whole activist line is nothing but that. It's a line. They know it. And, you know, it's just like all of a sudden these teabaggers are in favor of the Constitution and they're against this imperial presidential power.
Right. Well,
where you been for 8 years, jackasses? Are you kidding me?
Right. All right. Well, listen, let's talk about some of this. I'm hearing reports once again that in Arkansas there may have been some chicanery involved in Blanche Lincoln's just made it re-election thing, essentially re-election. What is your take on that?
Well, there's a lot that we still need to look into, and I always caution folks on these elections that, you know, immediately the media loves to come out, announce the winner before anybody has bothered to actually count any actual votes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the upside is in Arkansas, there actually are some existing votes that actually can be counted, although a lot of the state does use the wholly unverifiable touchscreen systems. But they race to announce a winner before they look at the problem. So a lot of the problems don't even emerge until the days and weeks after. What we do know right off the bat is what happened in Garland County. Have you already picked up what?
No, I have not. The missing voting machines again?
Well, no, they had 42 polling places open for the general primary 2 weeks ago on May 18th. And when they had some 12,000 voters, that got shut down to just two polling places.
Right, that's what I read.
For the primary runoff. Now, this was apparently one of Halter's biggest counties out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the election commissioner seems to have made this decision unilaterally. There's three commissioners. He made it on his own, I'm told, without taking a majority vote. And as a matter of fact, after complaints came out at the end of the week last week, because again, we're talking 12,000 voters in two polling places, he said, well, we'll leave it one of the polling places open on Saturday so folks can come over the weekend, and they put the word out to the press and everything else. Saturday morning, voters arrived by the hundreds to find a sign on the door that said, according to election code, blah, 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 in Arkansas, we're not allowed to have early voting today. Now, that's in direct contradiction to what the Secretary of State had told them. And the Secretary of State out there, who happens to be named Charlie Daniels, said that, sure, you can open up the polling place on Saturday. But they didn't. And sure enough, come Tuesday morning, there was accidents in the parking lot. You couldn't find a place to park. There was long lines. So that's a concern. And as I'm looking at the numbers tonight, out of 75 counties in Arkansas, Garland had, there was only 9 counties that had a lower turnout rate than Garland County.
Mm.
Now, why would that be?
It's astonishing to me. In the first place, the whole Blanche Lincoln, Bill Halter thing, you know, you have the White House displaying itself as completely anti-union, as far as I'm concerned. Somebody else may have a different interpretation of that. But completely anti-union and backing a conservative Democrat. Does anybody in this country still think, like I did, I'm sorry to admit, back in November of 2008, that Barack Obama might possibly, maybe if we all, you know, close our eyes and tap our heels together three times, be a real progressive? I mean, it's astonishing what they sent in Bill Clinton to, of course, Bill Clinton has never been a friend of unions. Look what he did with NAFTA.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's incredible. It's like we have crazy and crazier in this country. We have, once again, we have the choice with Blanche Lincoln and this freak running against her now. Boozman, is that his name? John Boozman?
Yeah.
Another one of these guys who wants to privatize Social Security. He wants to, oh my God! I can't even go down the list. This guy, he's kind of like the Scientologist who won in Nevada, Sharon Angle. Just close everything down. Just stop the government cold in its tracks. And people, I mean, these people get through primaries. They get nominations. What the hell is going on, Brad? I always ask that of you, don't I? What's going on, Brad?
Yeah, and I never have an answer.
No, you never do. I don't know who to ask. I've got nobody to ask.
I don't have anybody to ask either. That's why I guess host your show and I ask your audience. They don't know either. Everybody is screwed here. I mean, what the hell is the White House doing in the middle of a Democratic primary anyway? You know, what the hell were they doing in the middle of the primary out there in Pennsylvania? And I can't decide what I would like to see more come November. Do I want to see the Democrats get their asses kicked and so maybe they, you know, take a lesson from all of this?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, or do I want to see them do well so the Republicans get a lesson and have to rethink what the hell they're doing by 2012? I mean, the whole thing is such a mess at this point.
Well, you know, I suggested back in October, November 2008 that given what was being said about Obama, what McCain was doing and this crazy Palin, that maybe what people should have done back in 2008 was elect, go ahead and elect a Republican. So the country completely collapsed. And then maybe we could rebuild a progressive nation. But the counter argument to that was if these rat bastards get control, it'll never be taken from them. Ballot box or bullet box or whatever box, soap box, it'll never be taken back. So, you know, once again, I'm afraid that come November, of this year, it's going to be the choice again between the lesser of two real schmucks in so many of these elections. I don't know, Brad.
Well, I know, and that's what, you know, I'm thinking as well. And to, you know, on one side, if the Republicans do well, maybe, just maybe, Obama will suddenly figure out that he's been led off a cliff by Rahm Emanuel, and they can dump Rahm Emanuel.
That's the thing. Hey, can you do one more little segment?
Sure, I'd be happy to, because actually there's something I want to ask your listeners to do concerning Arkansas. So,
okay, hold on. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll come right back. We're talking with Brad Friedman. Go to bradblog.com and check out his website. He's got very important stuff there. We'll be right back.
right. From the left, it's more Mike Malone.
It's come through a hole in the air. From those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
21 past the hour, we're talking with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. If you were good listeners, you went to his website during the break. Certainly stop by there as often as you can, bradblog.com. Now, you had a question?
Well, 2 points I wanted to make concerning this Arkansas business. And I'll just refer folks over to my website, bradblog.com, to see what happened to me yesterday out here in Los Angeles when I tried to cast a vote on the e-vote system out here. 2 years ago, I used the same system, and it misprinted 4 out of 12 of my votes. Yesterday, it was it would have misprinted every single one of those votes, except we found that it wouldn't give me the right ballot for my congressional district.
Good God.
That was after they figured out how to give it to me in English, because I was using the audio ballot system, which they could only get programmed in Chinese, and then for the wrong district, and then finally for the Peace and Freedom Party instead of the party that I was trying to vote in. After 2.5 hours, I gave up, and another complete e-vote fail happened even to me, second time it's happened. But the reason I'm pointing that out is because, you know, I've been going on and on for years about the problem with our election system, and folks are looking at Arkansas, they're wondering what the hell happened. Mm-hmm. Well, I looked closely at what happened in Arkansas 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And on the night of the election and the following night, in Monroe County, there were thousands of votes in their voter turnout. Well, 3 days later, suddenly thousands of votes had simply disappeared. And I've got the screenshots from the Secretary of State's website, both on May 19th and then May 25th, by the time all of these votes were simply gone. I've spoken with everyone in Arkansas, the election director at the state. I've talked to all of the folks at the county, on the county level. And that was just one county, because frankly, I'm just one guy, and I can't look at everything. But we saw this right away and said, wait a minute, these numbers don't make sense. They have like a 64% turnout rate. That's very unusual for such a small county.
Right.
And thousands of votes have gone away. To this day, nobody can explain to me what happened to those thousands of votes. And I've got the screenshots from, you know, the day after the election, up until they disappeared. Some candidates went from having, you know, 384 votes the day after election to having one vote by the time it was certified. So I've been trying to say, you got to keep your eyes on all of this stuff. You got to raise holy hell, certainly, about our electoral system, but pay attention instead of running out and, you know, announcing who the winner is, conceding before any ballots are counted. Mm-hmm. Pay attention. Folks, please go to, in this case, concerning Arkansas, but this is true for anywhere, go to the Arkansas Secretary of State's website. It's votenaturally.org. Ironically enough,
votenaturally.org.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Start taking screenshots. Hopefully people know how to do that. But these numbers change, and there's no reason for them to change. You know, after an election, you may add a few votes as they count absentees and provisionals and so forth, but over 1,000 votes disappeared in the Republican primary on May 18th in Monroe County, Arkansas, and no one can explain it. And that's a tiny county of the 75 out there. So it's very important that people take, when they watch it, when they're looking at these results coming in, take screenshots, save them with the, you know, the date and the time you took them, because a lot of times the problems that we find are because, you know, people are paying attention, taking screenshots, and suddenly you go to the county or the Secretary of State and say, hey, what the hell happened here? And they look into it and they find there's a problem.
VoteNaturally.org. That sounds like something from the pen of R. Crumb. you know, when you get right down.
Well, it's particularly ironic given the voting system and the unbelievable failures they continue to have across Arkansas.
Oh my God.
Where they used mostly ES&S systems. But, I mean, the entire thing is a disaster. And until folks start raising holy hell about it with their local election officials, with their state election officials, I mean, I can't even get an answer at this point about why I was unable to cast a vote yesterday,
mm-hmm.
either from the Secretary of State in California or from my own registrar, which, by the way, is L.A. County, the largest jurisdiction in the nation. And it means that everybody who used that voting system that I tried to use last yesterday likely had every single vote misrecorded.
Oh, Jesus.
Do we give a damn yet?
I don't know, Brad. I'm starting to think that we don't. Hey, listen, we got to leave it there. You're gonna be taking over the reins of this show when? July 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th?
Something like that. Yeah, the week after July 4th. If your listeners want any particular guests, shoot it to me on Twitter at TheBradBlog. We'll try to get them.
BradBlog.com. Brad, thanks a lot. I always appreciate your insight.
Thanks, brother.
All right, sir. Take care.
You bet.
BradBlog.com. He will be filling in the week of July 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. You know, I had a few thoughts today that I was required to write down because I couldn't get them out of my head until I wrote them down. Once I wrote them down, then, okay, they're gone. Well, not gone, but I'm not focusing completely on it. The notes here make no sense. What is happening in the Gulf? It's as though everyone is paralyzed. No one seems to be working there except people with vacuums sucking up oil on the beaches. Oh, my God. I keep hearing there are 10 million feet of skimmers or floating booms. Where are they? I mean, every time I see pictures down there or I listen to these reporters that go down, whether it's CNN or ABC, whoever it is, and they say, you know, we were out on the water. Look, there's the oil. Where are the booms? Or boom, or whatever the hell. There are none. All day long today, I see TV commercials with Tony, what's his name, the CEO of BP, Tony Hayward. In that faux, I'm so sorry, voice of his, like, over and over. I mean, how many times did I see that commercial today? And, you know, one gets to the point where you want to throw something at the television until you realize, well, if you do that, then you're going to break your television. And if you don't have the, you know what I mean? Obama is going back to the Gulf. When? Tomorrow? BFD. I mean, what's he going to do? What? Is he going to go back and look for somebody's ass to plant his shoe in? Is that everybody's trying to get him to be mad? Very good explanation on Tweety's program tonight about this writer for the Washington Post. What is his name? But anyway, he was explaining why Obama, the black man, the Kenyan in the White House, can't show anger and rage about this. You know, white people have set it up so that any time a black man, doesn't make any difference who it is. Anytime a black man, especially a politician, shows any kind of anger, oh my God, look out! Here he comes! He's going to rape all the women! He's going to rape all the white women! Watch out! Watch out! Watch out! Black man! Angry black man! Angry black man! Oh my God! Do you remember when Muhammad Ali, I do remember when he came out, he was no longer Cassius Clay, came out as Muhammad Ali, said he was a Muslim, and, said he was not going to participate on any level in American imperialism in Vietnam. And he had some real colorful remarks why he wasn't going to do that. But the only time Muhammad Ali, probably one of the greatest athletes in the history of the world, was able to show any kind of anger was if he did it in a clownish way. That's the thing, you see. That's why I remember the first time I saw Richard Pryor or Chris Rock. You know, here are comedians who are not afraid to show anger at all. But you let a black man who's a politician, especially, get pissed off? Oh, my God. Here he comes! He's going to rape the white women! Watch out, watch out, watch out! So what's Obama going to do? He's going to go down there and do what? Tell Tony Hayward to get his act together again? Is he going to go down there and hang out with all these Republican Gulf Coast governors who couldn't care less about the oil spill? They really couldn't. As a matter of fact, they're all starting to demand now that Obama's moratorium on any further exploratory drilling be lifted. Why? Because of all the jobs in the Gulf Coast area that depends on drilling. It's incredible. Look what capitalism has done to these poor bastards that live along that Gulf Coast area. From the Florida Panhandle, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, people who have been in the oil refining business, which is what most of that is down there. People who have worked in an unprotected environment where they have been breathing this stuff and having physical contact with this stuff for years. And they die of the most hideous cancers. And they die in their 50s and 60s and 70s, way before they probably should. All the disease, the death and destruction that the oil industry has brought to the Gulf Coast area. And now this monster, the people who are not involved in the oil refining business in the Gulf Coast, the shrimpers, the fishermen, the charter boat captains, all those people now wiped out. It will never come back. Okay. It'll come back in 60 or 70 years, I've been hearing. So their livelihoods are gone. Gone. Forever in terms of their lives. Because we're talking about people who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s who have been working the Gulf of Mexico, the fishing industry. 60 years from now, every one of them will be dead. So what's going on? People in the Gulf area demanding Obama's exploratory pause be lifted. It's astonishing. The capitalist, corporatist, oil companies go into this area, this fragile ecology, the estuaries and streams and breeding grounds and migratory havens, and they go in with their drilling and their refining and destroy everything. Destroy it irreparably. There is no, every time I hear this rat bastard from BP, this Tony Hayward say, you know, we're gonna put the Gulf back. No, you are not, you son of a bitch, unless somehow you have figured out how to build life cycles in the Gulf that you and your filthy company destroyed. There is no way. We were watching CNN the other night at late afternoon. Molly was home. She came in to see what Kathy and I were yelling about, throwing stuff at the screen. And she heard Kathy and I talking about Tony Hayward. He's lying. He's lying. And Molly, you know, not quite sick, says, "He's lying, Daddy? Is he allowed to do that?" Oh, my God. So, capitalism comes into the Mississippi Gulf area. One of the most important, ecologically speaking, areas in the continental United States. Possibly in the Western Hemisphere. Capitalism comes in, and because capitalism is about capital, it's not about environment or people or life or children or families or wildlife or animals. It's about money, and it's about cutting costs to the bone. If you can save $500,000 and run the risk of a $100 billion disaster that will last for decades, but if you can save that $500,000 by not putting a certain piece of equipment in place, do it. That's capitalism. Screw the people. It's socialism after we destroy everything and move on, and then the people left behind can clean it up. BP and others now are threatening to leave. If Obama doesn't lift this temporary moratorium, they are now threatening to leave several of these oil companies, including BP, and go to a different body of water that then they, which they will then destroy. You know, there's all these unexplored bottoms of the ocean off the coast of Africa and South America and South Asia, just waiting for these puncturing, ramming hammer thuds into the bottom of the goddamn, ocean. More holes punched. So the oil companies are telling Obama, "Hey, dude, we let you get elected. You know why we let you get elected? You're getting a little porky. You're getting a little bit too froggy. You're starting to jump a little bit. Keep it up, sucker, and we're gone." And the people in the Gulf Coast area, "Please don't leave us. Mr. President, lift this embargo," or whatever you call it. What do you call it, Mr. President? This temporary stay, this, they can't drill, they can't explore. So capitalism comes into this area in the form of a branch of the filthiest industry in the history of the human race, the energy industry. And they do what they've done. And the people who are now trapped, no way out. Give us more. Give us more destruction. Give us, just please, please let the drilling continue, Mr. President, you bastard. Let it continue, Mr. President.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, I got an email here from Jingleheimer Schmidt in Canada. Mike, love the show. I'm from Canada. I love to listen to honest reports, what's going on in the world, blah, blah, blah. He sent me a link to BP's live feed. He said, I'm not sure, but this BP live feed looks like there are flames under the water. I'd love to hear what you see here. Well, I went to the link he provided. Yeah, it's the Scandi ROV-1. And if you want to pull that up any place, you know, it's out there several places. It is real scary looking. But I think, what you're seeing, John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, are those red, cables. I don't know what they are, but they're flopping around inside that cloud of oil. And it looks like flames. It surely does. That's right in the left center of the picture of the feed. In the right top part of the feed, it also looks like flames, but I think that is the paint on this what is this thing where the oil's spewing out of, Kathy? What is it? The riser? Yeah, that is scary looking, but I think that's what it is. Kathy, I'm going to send you this link, and you you take a look. This is pretty scary stuff, man. why am I laughing? I don't know, because if I don't laugh, I'll start screaming. And, you know, maybe it is time to move to Vancouver. What do you think? Late last month, after this gusher was caused by BP, Mississippi State House Speaker Billy McCoy, who's a Democrat, and Lieutenant Governor Phil Bryant, who's a Republican, created a select committee to investigate the Gulf Coast oil spill, oil gusher. McCoy, the Democrat, said, quote, "The people of Mississippi deserve to know how this happened and what the future may hold for this most valuable part of our state," end quote. A key part of the select committee's mission would be to hold hearings with top officials from companies responsible for the gusher. However, according to Barb, who sent this to me yesterday, BP wrote a letter saying it will not go to the hearings, 3-day hearings. Think Progress obtained the letter to Speaker McCoy. It's addressed from BP's Mississippi coordinator for public and government affairs. Her name is Margaret D. Laney, L-A-N-E-Y. Quote from the letter from Ms. Laney. "I regret that we are unable to accommodate your invitation to participate Wednesday or Thursday in the hearing of the Mississippi House of Representatives Select Committee on the Gulf Coast Disaster. We at BP take very seriously the desire of the Select Committee to gather information on the circumstances of the Mississippi coast relative to the oil spill. We are committed to meeting regularly with stakeholders along the Gulf Coast and to providing briefings for government officials on a regular basis, and we will continue to remain engaged in this way. When we meet with the committee, it will be important for us to have appropriate BP representatives who are implementing the strategic response plan for Mississippi and working in the Mississippi Gulf Coast area. Unfortunately, the appropriate individuals are not available this week. We would be pleased to work with the select committee to identify a day in the near future for another meeting of the committee, either in Jackson or on the coast, where the committee can also visit incident response operations." So the letter from Margaret Laney, BP's Mississippi coordinator, more or less gives the middle finger to the Democratic Speaker of the Mississippi House and the Republican Lieutenant Governor. And more or less says, look, boys, go back to harassing Negroes or whatever you people do in Mississippi. You know, we're not going to show up. Don't you have I don't know, what do y'all call it down there? A lynching? Don't you have a lynching you could go do? Isn't there somebody you could harass? Isn't there? I mean, aren't there civil rights workers you can burn? Oh, wait a minute, gosh, all of that was 50 years ago. All right, listen. Go back to whatever you people do. What do you do here? Oh, that's right. You gamble. You have gaming, I believe you call it, operations. So go do that. But we at BP, it's not convenient for us. We don't have the appropriate people available Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. They are going to be in Washington spreading campaign money around to some key members of key committees who are going to be investigating this eventually. So we're not available. Sorry. Well, maybe sometime in the near future, she writes. Sometime in the near future, maybe, just maybe, we here at BP will pay attention to you little rednecks in Mississippi. Now, the fact is, of course, Haley Barbour, the very corpulent, very white governor of Mississippi, probably helped BP draft this letter. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Skelton is a Missouri Democrat who is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. God. And Ike Skelton said today that the military should keep the don't ask, don't tell policy intact, so that parents don't have to talk to their children about homosexuality. The House voted to overturn the law last month. If a repeal provision gets through the Senate, repeal could go into effect after the conclusion of a Pentagon study ending December 1st and subsequent approval from President Bohica and the military brass. But according to the Associated Press, Democrat Ike Skelton, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, told reporters that repeal of the policy could put families in a difficult position because it could prompt children to ask about homosexuality. Mr. Skelton asked, "What do mommies and daddies say to their 7-year-old child about this?" Skelton, by the way, was one of the 26 Democrats who opposed repeal in the House. And he added that his, quote, biggest concern are the families. It should be biggest concern is the families. You moron. So Richard Allen Smith, writing at vetvoice.com, said, as I previously stated, one of the most spineless, bigoted, and downright irrational voices in the debate over repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been none other than Ike Skelton, Democratic chair of the House Armed Services Committee. As Skelton has himself stated, his constituents don't really see repeal as a controversial issue. However, that doesn't keep the lawmaker from opposing it for his own ridiculous chief concern. What do mommies and daddies say to their seven-year-old child? Tell them that this warmongering corporatist country needs men and women, gay or straight, Jew or Gentile, black or white, who are willing to go die for capitalism and corporatism. That's what the mommies and daddies tell their children, Reverend Ike. Try that. And besides, Reverend Ike, since you have such a hard time with the queer thing, maybe the parents could say, this is how the government gets rid of the queers. Crazy bastards. Crazy bastards. Now, that's not, of course, what Richard Allen Smith, writing at vetvoice.com, said. That's what Mike Malloy said. Richard Allen Smith said, what do the children or the mommies and daddies tell their seven-year-olds? It's real damn simple, Ike. Tell them that when a country needs brave, patriotic men and women to defend it, anyone who is willing, qualified, competent, and capable should be permitted to fight for their country. To continue a policy that prescribes otherwise... To continue a policy that prescribes otherwise does nothing but harm the ability of such a nation to defend itself. Well, I get what you're saying, Richard. I really do, and it's very high-minded rhetoric. But being a veteran, you know that we don't fight for freedom in this country anymore, and haven't since December 9th or 10th, 1941, the last time there was a declaration of war. And even that war could be seen as a contest between two economic / political systems for dominance. Oh, I know that's being very cynical, Mr. Mike. You shouldn't do that. But, yeah, if gay folk want to fight for corporate America and capitalism and go have their heads blown off and their arms removed and legs removed and their futures destroyed and their significant others back here left to bleed tears and sweat blood, why shouldn't homosexuals have the same entree into madness as heterosexuals? But according to Ike Skelton, oh, what will we tell the children? Oh, my God. How do we tell them that some people are homosexual? Oh, what am I going to do? So it's not just teabaggers and Republicans who are insane. Ike Skelton, obviously, is out of his mind. Jeanette writes, why isn't the ultimatum coming from the president instead of from BP? Such as the president should say, hand over the money and equipment and get the F out. Oh, damn, Jeanette writes, I forgot again. The big change he campaigned on is bipartisanship and civility. How stupid of me. That's what will save the Gulf and our democracy. Hang on, I've got to go get my pom-poms. Okay, I'm back. So sorry I voted for that bleeping bleep. I never wasted my vote when I voted for Ralph Nader. President Nader. Think this catastrophe would even have happened if he'd been in office for the last, oh, never goddamn mind, Mike. Ooh, You slipped in a GD word. If we don't start instant runoff voting in this country, we've got no chance. Just more corporate blankers in government with a revolving door to corporate lobbydom. Jeanette. Blankers. Now, I have to say, Jeanette, that's even in the abbreviated form and the, you know, the blank line that you put it. That's the first time I think anyone has used that word. You know what word I'm saying, don't you? That's the only time I've ever seen an email with that. Way to go, Jeanette. All right. From BC, who, regarding the people on the Mississippi Gulf Coast who are really being hurt, the refinery workers, I'm sure he's referring to, not the people who made their livelihoods from the Gulf, from the fishing industry. BC writes, I have little sympathy for those going through this. It's theirs. They own it. Now they can secede. They're not worth keeping. They're despoiled. And it was self-inflicted. Those who are crying, I want to know how they voted. And more importantly, if they're affiliated with the Tea Party. There's no crying at a Tea Party. If they can carry a gun around my president, why haven't they shot one of those damn foreigners, the BP people? Why aren't they at least throwing tar balls at Haley Barbour? I'm saving my sympathy for me and mine and the acid rain that's certainly coming my way. Yeah, I certainly understand the sentiment. Nathan writes, Mike, I recall several years back when you read the novel 1984 over the air. And I wanted to bring to attention a dystopian novel that is very accurate in many ways called The Iron Heel by Jack London. In it, he describes the socialist labor movement and their violent overthrow of the master class who form the oligarchy. I believe the oligarchy is with us today. In a land where the politicians are but tools, friendly faces with dreams of greed and power, bought by those who control the media, the energy, the medicine, and the military, there's nothing else to think. Cheers, Nathan. For the Orlando Independent Examiner. Mike, ironically, the oil in the Gulf may affect the very industry that created the mess in the first place, the energy industry. Here's an excerpt from one of my articles for the Orlando Independent Examiner. Quote, in its May 12th situation report on the BP oil spill, the U.S. Department of Energy noted that there was a risk to, quote, a number of power plants, end quote, that draw cooling water directly from the Gulf of Mexico or adjacent saltwater sources. The report said, quote, if the water supply for these facilities become contaminated with oil, cooling water systems could be damaged, end quote. According to National Geographic, oil clogging water intakes does pose a risk of power shutdowns at both nuclear and coal-fired plants. The Anclote facility, which provides electricity to about 600,000 households north of Tampa, St. Petersburg, is just one of at least six power stations along the Gulf Coast that could be at risk from the crude spreading out from BP's wrecked well site. Southern Company's Gulf Power facility near Pensacola is also at risk. End quote from Greg's article. He goes on. Power shutdowns are just one of many risks to businesses and infrastructure in the Gulf that could long persist even after the flow of oil is stopped. Another risk is to water purification plants that use reverse osmosis of seawater to produce drinking water, such as the Tampa Bay Seawater Desalinization Plant at Apollo Beach, just south of Tampa. The plant, which uses seawater reverse osmosis to turn seawater into 16 to 19 million gallons of drinking water daily for residents of the Tampa Bay area, the plant faces the threat of filtration membranes becoming clogged if oil from the Gulf of Mexico enters its intake pipes. Such an event would render the plant unable to process seawater, resulting in a major freshwater shortage for Tampa Bay. I really think that most people in Florida do not fully understand the far-reaching implications of this disaster. Some are just saying, well, the beaches are clear now, so come on down to vacation. I wonder what they would think if power failures and water shortages shut down Disneyland. Greg in Florida. Yow. Boy, I didn't know about that. And I probably could have gone all week without knowing about it. The water needed to cool nuclear reactors sucked in from... never mind. Jesus, God. Mike, one word that you will not hear today in connection with energy is conservation. It seems to have joined the seven words that you can't say on the radio. We waste vast quantities of energy and petroleum in a consumptive lifestyle. Is that the right word? It sounds like a disease that people used to die from, but it may be appropriate. Once upon a time, there was a guy named Jimmy Carter who said we should turn out the lights, put on a sweater in the winter, and use a solar water heater. He was ridiculed as a lunatic and was forgotten. We continue to drive our Hummers just as someone ate the last dodo and someone cut down the last tree on Easter Island. Soon the last drop of gasoline will be poured into the last functioning Hummer. Someday an archaeologist will dig it up, finding the driver still behind the wheel, starved to death. Perhaps some of my children and grandchildren will survive because I've taught them that it's not about stuff. Especially, it's not about stuff shipped in from China. It's about stuff you can grow and make. Larry. Jesus, God, that's right. Remember, as soon as Ronald Reagan came into office, he had the solar panels on the White House removed. I don't know. Danny writes, Dear Mike, why do we even bother? I feel very confident in saying that 6 months after this oil disaster is over, if it is ever over, these filthy oil companies will be back to doing the same thing with little or no regulation. Just like the Wall Street pigs are back in business as usual after damn near destroying the country, the oil jackasses will do the same. They have too much money. And all our politicians care about, Democrat or Republican, is money. The country will never make any serious moves toward clean energy until it's forced to do so. When we wake up one morning and CNN tells us that there is no oil left on Earth, then we will scramble like headless chickens to try to find an alternative energy source. But of course, by then, it'll be too late. Sorry to sound so negative, but I really feel like we are wasting our time trying to save Rome when the Huns are already at the gates. Danny.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, we'll do some calls. Scott is in Auburn, Alabama, listening on XM. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Oh. Sorry?
Yeah, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I've listened to you a fair amount.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I've heard so many things that you are upset with and don't like. I'm interested in where in the world you think things are being done correctly.
They could be done correctly here. You're not one of those people that believe in cutting and running, do you?
In what
Hello?
Sense? In what sense?
Well, you say, where do I think things are run correctly? They could be run correctly in this country. This is my country. This is my country of birth. Are you still there? No, you hung up, you son of a bitch. What happened to this freak? He hung up on me. You don't hang up on me, you creepoid. I hang up on you. Yeah, call back so I can hang up on you, you piece of human waste. What was up with that guy, Kathy? He wanted to know where I wanted to live. I want to live here.
Since you hate America, what country would you
No, I hate
rather?
People like him who put these tacky politics. He's not America. You know, all these right-wing teabagger freaks, they're not America. Good God. Jay is driving in North Dakota, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, coming back from a lousy job in the oil fields, but...
What?
You gotta,
really?
Yeah. Well, the economy's been so great under the Bush years.
Yeah.
I got to drive 380 miles to work 15 days straight so I could support my family back in Minnesota.
Oh, my God. But, what oil field and what do you do?
A lot of people aren't aware. There's a really huge oil field in North Dakota. I mean, there's a lot of oil there. And I work for a service company, which I pump cement down hole and put casing in. I don't feel real good about my job because it's safer to be a gay man in the oil field than it is to be a liberal. So I get a lot of grief there. But anyways.
Wait, that went right by me. Say that again.
I said it's actually safer to be a gay man in the oil patch in North Dakota than it is to be a liberal.
Really?
Oh my God, yeah. I almost got literally thrown off a rig because I voted for President Obama, you know? I mean, this was crazy stuff. But anyways, there's small-minded people everywhere.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I got to support my family, you know, so I got to do what I got to do.
Right.
But the reason I was calling was I've been listening to your show for a long time, Take What You Do. Really ticked me off tonight when you were talking about that. I can't remember that guy because I got so mad I forgot his name, about using my child as an excuse to spread his homophobia.
Oh, yeah, you know? That's a Democrat, Ike Skelton of Missouri, who is a... who is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. So he has a lot of power. He's a blue dog Democrat or a conservative Democrat, whatever. But,
he is a chuckle nut.
He is a chuckle nut. I've never heard anything like that. That we don't want to have hearings on this, don't ask, don't tell military rule that is going by, because what are the mommies and daddies going to tell their children about homosexuality? I mean, this guy, this is astonishing, but there it is.
I have a bright, beautiful 7-year-old son who I talk to him about homosexuality. I mean, good God, his godparents are a gay couple that got married in Oregon. You know, I mean,
right.
It's a fact of life. It's a good thing. You know, I mean, it's just theirs.
Well, you know, my almost...
It's a matter of science. It's not a matter of morality. These idiots have got to understand that.
Well, and they never will. You know, my almost 6-year-old, Jay, we were...
Yeah, Molly.
Yeah, Molly. We were talking one day, or one night, we were laying in bed telling story, or I was telling her story. When I finished up, I don't know why she brought this up, but she said, you know, she's telling me about She wants to marry this boy in her kindergarten class, and she wants to marry that boy. And then she starts saying, I also want to marry, and then she started naming a bunch of girls. And I said, well, you won't be able to do that here in Georgia. And she wanted to know why. And I said, well, because people here in Georgia are pretty bass-ackwards, and they don't like the idea that girls might want to marry girls or boys might want to marry boys. And, of course, all right, now, granted, this kid is not quite six, but she sat up in bed and looked at me and with her eyes real wide, and she said, but why?
You know, that's just a better way to. I always say there's two things that my son can't be. One is a Green Bay Packers fan because I'm from Minnesota. The other one is if he comes home and says that, you know, Ronald Reagan was the best president we ever had.
Right.
I don't care if he's eight. I got to say, you know, son, you were raised better than that. You got to go. You know,
right. But, goodbye.
If you come home from college and says my boyfriend Steve, cool. You know, you guys sleeping together. I don't care.
Right.
Because I love my son, you know. But, yeah. But the other thing that really tripped me out was, and it just, this what really my impetus for calling was that was in 1980 when that idiot took the solar panels off the White House.
That's right.
Do you remember what a computer looked like in 1980? Can you imagine if we were to pursue that line from that point on to today, where we would be with solar power?
It's incredible. Probably a good percentage, maybe what? Pick a number. 70-80% of the energy needs in this country would be provided by that huge reactor 93 million miles away from here that provides
it's
all
unbelievable.
It's astonishing.
I'm 45. I remember when I was in junior high school and when my dad was a big Carter supporter.
Uh-huh.
So we were doing all kinds of energy efficient stuff. And you know, that was the buzz. I live in Minnesota. It's freaking cold here in the winter. So, you know, the first thing a Minnesotan says when he walks into a building is, I wonder how much it costs to heat this place. Right? So, you know, I mean, one of the things that he used to, you know, that we talked about that. And then I remember going through high school, and the energy conservation just went by the wayside.
Yeah.
You know, we just didn't discuss it. So, I mean, that's really kind of, it just kind of put things in perspective for me. But anyways, man, I dig your show. Been listening to you for a long time. Imagine you got a lot of callers. And
It's good of you to call in, Jay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the support, and thanks for calling, okay?
Yeah, keep up the good work, man.
All right.
I'll keep listening.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Take care. Take care. You know, I compare a phone call from somebody like Jay to the moron that called in and then hung up. I mean, why is it that all the normal people seem to be, I don't know if Jay's a Democrat or what he is. I get the impression that he's probably a Democrat or might be an independent, but all the normal people are not Republicans. They're not right wingers. If you don't like this country, why don't you find wherever you want to go? I mean, this is the half-acidness of all right-wingers, all Republicans, all tea-baggers. I mean, it's that half-acid attitude that is just, oh. Thank God for callers like Jay. And, you know, a lot of folks who call this program. But the contrast, I'm sure if you're listening out there, you can tell the difference between the morons and I've kind of asked Kathy, you know, in 20 years, well, all right, in 10 years of doing talk radio, because back in the day, calls had to be screened and chewed over, but in the past 10 years, we've never screened a phone call at all. Kathy just gets basic information. But these rat bastards have gotten so crazed and so just, I don't know. I just don't want them on the air. They've got 9,000 other radio programs where they can go play with themselves with the, you know, on the air. I just don't want them on the program. So, Kathy is going to, at my insistence, not hers, start screening the calls, actually talking to the people a little bit before we put them on the air. Because this madness has gone on long enough. If you have read some of the emails that we posted that we've gotten in the past couple of days, stuff that I don't know, it comes from, you know, the hate mail, but it comes from the mind of only right wingers. You know, a lot of people say I'm, you know, not left enough. And they're probably right. I have a lot of people listening to this program who are real. I try to be a democratic socialist, but I'm having a hard time, you know. I can talk the talk, but I have a hard time walking the walk. There are people listening to this program who do walk the walk, who do pay attention to a far greater degree than I do. And sometimes I get letters, critical letters from emails from them. But the criticism from the left is usually, always constructive. They don't say that my child is going to wind up as a whore, or that my wife is already a whore. You know, the criticism from the left is always thought out, well written, and makes a point. The criticism from the right is the kind of puke drivel that you expect from some teabag alcoholic freak who stumbles around Skid Row someplace choking on his own bile. You know what I mean?
Not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
When you walk and you talk that talk.
10 before the hour, the writer from the Orlando Independent Examiner, whose work I quote on this program frequently, I've been pronouncing his name Peyton. It's not. It's Patton, as in general. Anyway, he sent me a picture here, a photo. We're going to put it up at our website. It's from a BP gas station. It's out at the pump island. You know, it's just a gas station, and there's the pump. And on the column alongside the pump, there's a sign that says, warning, do not leave pumps unattended. You are responsible for spills. Jesus, God. Make sure that goes on the website, all right? What's up now? Kevin and Carlin, Jacks Beach, Florida writes, Mike, we have a son that will be 7 in August. Our condominium overlooks the Atlantic Ocean, so our son is naturally concerned about the oilgasm. We will explain gays in the military to, Congressman Ike Skelton's grandkids when he explains the ongoing destruction of the planet to our son. We will then explain why even married heterosexuals should support gay marriage, and he can explain why he's against health care for all. Or maybe he can explain the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. We are sure that will be much easier than explaining gays in the military or gay marriage. Thanks, Kevin and Carla. And Lori writes, was 1990 so long ago? If we invaded Kuwait in 1990 to pull BP's testicles out of the fire, do we really think BP gives a blank about what bought-off American politicians say about the Gulf oil inconvenience? No. This is what fascism looks like. And a big thanks to the Democrat Leadership Conference. This is their mission, their vision statement. Later. Actually, it's Jesse who sent this. And this is, I don't know where this is from. Probably from BP. It's called the Kuwait Petroleum Corporation. In 1934, the Kuwait Oil Company Limited was established by the Anglo-Persian Oil Company, now known as British Petroleum, and the Chevron Corporation. The company activities had extended to include exploration operations, onshore and offshore surveys, drilling of test wells, and developing of producing fields in addition to crude and natural gas exploration. In 1938, oil was found in commercial quantities in the Bergen field. In June 1946, His Highness Sheikh Ahmed al-Jaber al-Sabah, the late Emir of Kuwait, inaugurated the export of the first crude shipment. This is all BP. New fields were developed and export facilities were expanded, resulting in the construction of the North and South Piers, the Sea Island, and the Single Point Mooring. In 1975, the Kuwait government took over 100% of the Kuwait Oil Company. In 1980, Kuwait Petroleum was established. The Kuwait Oil Company was devastated by the invasion in 1990 from Iraq. However, after liberation on February 26, 1991, and within months, production gradually returned to full capacity. And it goes on and on. So, I mean, every time you turn around, you find BP. Every time you turn around, overthrowing the government of the duly elected government of Iran, establishing the oil fields in Kuwait. They just don't stop. Oh, by the way, BP has bought Google search terms in order to control the flow of information. Yeah, Kathy's mouth just dropped down. This is from the Mail of the UK. Oil giant attempts to stem the flow of criticism on Facebook and Twitter. Top internet search terms such as oil spill have been bought by BP as the company attempts to salvage its reputation in the wake of the Gulf of Mexico disaster. The oil giant has paid for the Google and Yahoo results in a bid to moderate the flow of criticism against it on social networking sites such as Twitter and Facebook. Web users searching for oil spill on Tuesday night brought up a link to BP's website with the tagline, "Learn more about how BP is helping." Toby O'Doni, a BP spokesman, told The Telegraph, "The aim behind the purchase was to make information on the leak more accessible." You son of a bitches. See, they bought the terms. And the reason they bought it is to make information about the spill more accessible. Tony O'Done, the BP spokesman, said, quote, "We have bought search terms on search engines like Google to make it easier for people to find out more about our efforts in the Gulf and make it easier for people to find key links to information on filing claims, reporting oil on the beach, and signing up to volunteer," end quote. Oh, my God. And you don't think you live in a corporatist society? Huh? And as far as Tony Hayward, his comments about this eruption that is destroying the Gulf of Mexico and the lives of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people and families, his comments, we have some here that we'll share with you when we come back. Stick around. We have another entire hour. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. Regarding that live video feed from the Gusher, yeah, if you look at it, it damn sure looks like there's a fire going on down there. Prairie 2 writes, you could have a fire if you pumped liquid oxygen into the stream, but otherwise, no. Probably a reflection from the God knows how many million candle power floodlights they're using to get a high-def video in that murky crap. But then there's this. Who sent this to me? Billy Jack sent this to me from Wikipedia. Methane clathrate, C-L-A-T-H-R-A-T-E. Methane clathrate, also called methane hydrate, methane ice, or fire ice, is a solid clathrate compound in which a large amount of methane is trapped within a crystal structure of water, forming a solid similar to ice. Originally thought to occur only in the outer regions of the solar system where temperatures are low and water ice is common, significant deposits of methane clathrate have been found under sediments on the ocean floors of Earth. Methane clathrates, methane hydrates are believed to be to form by the migration of gas from depths along geological faults, followed by precipitation or crystallization, or contact of the rising gas stream with cold seawater. It goes on and on. You can check it out at Wikipedia if you want. Methane clathrate, C-L-A-T-H-R-A-T-E, methane clathrate. And it has a picture here that looks pretty much like what we're seeing on that video feed. I don't know. Wouldn't that be hellish? Huh? Wouldn't that be hellish?
I just don't see how anything could be worse than, you know, so if it's burning up, it's burning up. I mean, what is worse than what is happening?
Well, I think because, you know, I just have this sick feeling. I you know, it's very difficult to make this any worse than it is. But I have this sick feeling, Kathy, that if they don't get this thing stopped, there's going to be some kind of a sea floor collapse. Because it's, I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking in terms of physics. I don't know how hydraulics and geological pressures, and I don't know if that's a tectonic plate area. I don't know if it's an earthquake zone. But with these millions of gallons of hydraulic pressure being released and coming out and going up and leaving where it was, what's going to happen is the rock structure as far down below the surface. And this is another thing. We don't know where they tapped into this oil ocean. You know, all we know, they went down 5,000 feet and drilled a hole in the earth. I have read everything from they had a permit to go another 10,000, another 7,000, another 18, and they actually went down another 25,000 feet. Now, that's 5 miles. I realize the mantle of the earth is a lot thicker than that, but what's down there? They've tapped into an ocean of oil. What happens once it all comes up? If in fact it all comes up? I mean, that's all. I can't help but wonder what's going to happen. The ultimate bad news would be the floor of the ocean collapsing. Ralph the trucker writes, "Hello, Mike. I'm a truck driver whose home is in Theodore, Alabama. Next week, Obama is supposed to come to Theodore, where we have a place where they clean these oily pelicans. I found this video about the oil at AL.com. That's run by, I think, a Mobile newspaper. AL.com. It shows the tar balls that are floating below the surface. I used to be a shrimper when I was young. Believe me, this will destroy the seafood industry in Louisiana, Alabama, Florida. I like to listen to you when I drive, but sometimes the truth is very hard to digest. Here's the link to the video. Keep it up, Ralph the Trucker. Yeah, AL.com. I think that was the video that, one of the videos I've been looking at too. Yeah, I have no idea. You know, Kathy may be right. It just may be stuff in, things flapping around, the color of the riser, or whatever the hell it is where that stuff is coming out. I don't know. Jesus, God in heaven. Oy. Okay. Kevin is in Santa Fe listening on KTRC. KTRC. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Mike. I don't feel so alone when I hear you because, you know, I've been mad about this stuff for a long time.
I hear you.
And I can remember, you know, it was taking me back to when I used to rail about Bush and I was told to go and find another country, as if this country wasn't based on people wanting the right to speak out, speak truth to power. And you were saying earlier how you would like to see a different world, and the world that we, you know, I think the founders envisioned here in America. And I was telling Catherine that it's like it would be nice just to see our current laws enforced, the laws that are against torture, like the treaties we signed, mm-hmm. from that, on and on, down to having the actual laws that we have in place about these oil wells, instead of just this farce of a contingency plan that they filed using language from their Alaskan plan to protect walruses.
Mm-hmm.
There was an interesting report last night, I think, where he said that they had done a study on releasing oil at depths with dispersant, which our government was complicit with, same as they were complicit in overthrowing Mossadegh and Iran, mm-hmm. but that said that this formed plumes. So every time they get on there and say that it doesn't form plumes, they do it with full knowledge that it does because they've studied it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a bunch of lying people, and I've been saying since Reagan that they are not going to create like the world that they are creating with this stuff. And, you know, and it's just, it's all piling up, Mike. When Blanche Lincoln went last night due to the shenanigans in that county where they closed 40 polling stations down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was going on the Brad blog trying to find out whether or not they were, what voting machines they were using, I can't tell. But it's just such a racket. And if we had paper ballots hand counted and the actual laws that we have on the books were really enforced instead of this only enforced against poor people, it would be a totally different country, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. And isn't it amazing that using paper ballots, Kevin, would be so simple. It would be so inexpensive, except for the fact that people would have to be paid to actually count them. And it would provide an instant, verifiable, actual, true, real receipt as to how the person voted. And you gotta wonder, why don't the states go for that? Well, I think the quick answer is, even down on the state legislature level, corporatism or capitalism has really sunk in its teeth, its nails, and its fangs. And they control the process in so many areas, even down to that level. You know, you got to wonder how long it'll be before, maybe they do now, before they control mayoral elections in the various cities. But, I think it's game, set, match, frankly, where it concerns the control that corporations exert over this country. Thanks, Kevin. I got a boogie. I appreciate you checking in, pal.
Yeah. From the moment you wake and leave the house in the morning, the terrorists or Democrats strike without warning. So to your backseat in bed, wear a bucket on your head. That's what I said. And to show
the Mike Malloy Show, talk radio matters here.
Raids on Iraq and the rape of the ecology while the treasury's being bled.
21 past the hour. I got distracted there. Tony Hayward, the CEO of BP. April 29th, the New York Times reported that Hayward, apparently exasperated, turned to fellow executives in his London office and asked, quote, "What the hell did we do to deserve this?" end quote. May 14th, Hayward attempted to persuade the Guardian newspaper that, quote, "The Gulf of Mexico is a very big ocean. The amount of volume of oil and dispersant we are putting into it is tiny in relation to the total water volume," end quote. Days later, he told Sky News that, quote, "The environmental impact of this disaster is likely to be very, very modest," end quote. May 30th, Hayward played the sympathy card. He told the Today Show that, quote, "There's no one who wants this over more than I do. I would like my life back," end quote. May 31st, he said that ecosystem-threatening underwater oil plumes did not exist. "There aren't any plumes," Hayward claimed. And on June 1st, Hayward responded to claims that cleanup workers were being sickened by the fumes from the oil they were exposed to by suggesting another possible non-oil spill cause. When 9 workers fell ill, he told CNN that food poisoning is clearly a big issue. This guy is, but that's the arrogance, the utter arrogance of corporatists, of capitalist CEOs. That they, again, you know, I don't have to keep repeating this. They don't care. There is no concern about life of any form, microscopic. Thinking, breathing, walking, talking, life, ecosystems, they don't care. Capitalism cares nothing about that. Nothing. And Tony Hayward is nothing more nor less than a mouthpiece for the most predatory kind of capitalism, the kind that gouges into the earth with nobody's permission. Who in the goddamn hell gave this man permission? Huh? Oh, he got a permit. Did you acquiesce, truth seeker? If you live on the Gulf or you visit the Gulf or you live in the United States, did you sit down and say to Tony Hayward when he asked you for a permit to punch holes in the bottom of the ocean, "Sure, Tony"? This is what capitalism does. It doesn't ask anybody anything. Let me rephrase that. It asks the corporate politicians it put in office, "Here, sign this. I put you in office. Now sign this so I can go ahead and start punching holes or cutting off the tops of mountains or blasting streams or killing live, killing plant life, animal life, any kind of life. Sign it!" And these filthy, pissy politicians do it. Who gave permission for this monster company to punch a hole in the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico, part of the bottom, 5,000 feet down the bottom, and do this? Who gave him permission? What about how many drilling rigs are in the Gulf of Mexico? 300, 700, 900? I don't even know. I know it's in the hundreds. Who gave them permission? Who gave them permission to put the entire ecosystem of the Gulf of Mexico at risk? Who said that? Who said, "Go ahead. Go right ahead"? Do you have something in place in case you F up and everything starts to explode? What do you got? "Oh, yeah, we have something in place." What? "Oh, don't worry." You bastards. You dirty bastards. Yeah.
Well, and you ask, well, who gave these people the right to punch holes in the bottom of our ocean? Who gave this foreign company the right to order our Coast Guard around and and tell our Coast Guard to keep the reporters away from the Gulf of Mexico off the coast of one of the United States? That's the part that I have a real hard time with. Here's this foreign company ordering around the U.S. military. And the U.S. military is taking orders from them.
Well, wait just a second.
That's freaking me out.
If I may be so bold, who do you think ordered U.S. troops in 1990 into Kuwait and into Iraq? Do you really think that that was George Herbert Walker Bush? Or do you think his orders came from the oil companies? I'm sorry, I don't mean to minimize what you just said, because you're absolutely right. But the U.S. military, my dear, has been taking orders from, quote, foreign corporations, end quote, and domestic corporations, I don't know, for what, 50 years? So, teachable moment here. Seriously, your question is valid. It's just about 5 decades too late. It's 25 before the hour. Regarding the methane clathrate and, you know, the little picture I painted of extinction-level event, Prairie 2 writes in, there is an unknown amount of methane clathrate at the bottom of the ocean in deep water. And is perhaps several feet deep and covered with mud. No, it won't burn without oxygen. The risk from global warming is that if the oceans get warm enough, that all this stuff would start bubbling out and put the greenhouse effect up to planet Venus levels. That would be a total extinction event. The oil won't all come out. Oil is distributed in folds of rock and is hard to get out. It takes a lot of wells and fracturing operations to extract it. This one will run dry eventually. Okay, well, I'm reassured. What's that? The risk about global warming is that if the oceans get warm enough, that all this stuff would start bubbling out and put the greenhouse effect up to planet Venus levels. And earlier when BC wrote in about acrid rain, I corrected it to acid rain. And he writes in, no, that's not a typo. Acid rain came and went, at least the reporting is such. This is new. We'll be able to feel it, smell it, slip on it, drink it, and for sure, see it. Ah, that pretty rainbow coloring when oil mixes with water. We'll be peeing rainbows. Look at the pretty colors. Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. Stephen is in Burbank. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I know you're not going to get any comfort from this, but I had the same thought about the collapse of the floor.
Yeah. I don't know anything about this, and most people in this country don't. But that's where Prairie 2 provides such a valuable service to the program. You know,
yeah,
what is
Venus, like 550 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that?
Say it again?
560 degrees Fahrenheit.
What's that?
Venus, the planet Venus.
Oh, yeah, well.
not good.
Whatever it is, you wouldn't want to live there, would you? Or visit. But,
we're going to have to adapt.
But I keep thinking about, you know, rock formations, huge ones. I mean, the size of states or whatever collapsing underneath the Gulf of Mexico. I don't want to think about this stuff, you know. I want to think about whether or not we're going to, you know, roast some corn on the cob this weekend. I don't want to think about this crap. And if we do, it'll probably be altered by Monsanto. So, you know.
That's what I mean by adapt.
I know.
Oh, it gets pretty crazy. But what I really called about was, you know, the same old thing for years about psychology and politics. Mm-hmm. And Noam Chomsky referred to it as being the manufacturing of consent.
Right.
And Adam Curtis referred to it as being the engineering of consent.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, there's a word called internalization.
Right.
And what it was I finally got first-hand experience to understand it completely, because I don't know squat unless I actually do hands-on and do it. You know, I never understood the internal combustible engine until I bought the book of the tools and took apart the engine. And, oh, that's how it works, compression, you know, vacuum,
right. Mm-hmm.
And all that other neat stuff. But with psychology, it's like, with the internalization, it's because you become one with your ideology in your belief system as it relates to reality. And what it was I told this guy, you know, about, you know, I had some problems getting my W-2 or W-4, whatever it is, taking out extra so I could get an income tax refund.
Mm-hmm.
And they messed it up naturally, and I made a comment about the efficiency of private enterprise. And this guy went through the roof. And I understood it completely. And I said, now I know. Now I know how it works. Now I know what they mean by it, having read the Conservatives Without Conscience. You know, it's
right.
The authoritarian personality. This is what it is. This is the way it is. It seems to work for me. And so that's all there is. There's nothing else. And so it goes, so forth and so on.
Yeah, and so it goes.
And earlier I made a comment in one of your shows some time ago about capitalism. The capitalist, you know, how the capitalist will destroy capitalism somehow in relation to the frog and the scorpion.
Right.
And this has got to be it. If we live through this, if somehow the oil does not destroy the earth within the next 50, 100 years or whatever, that is the way it's going to have to be. It's going to have to be democratic socialism, because those guys that went out on those fishing boats and got us our shrimp and our lobsters and our clams, They're going to have to be taken care of, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly don't look, Stephen, for BP.
They are going to do it.
No, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it at all. Don't forget, they keep talking about BP will handle all legitimate claims. And, you know, losing one's livelihood for the next 40 years, it will not be a legitimate claim to BP. Hey, thanks, Stephen.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care. Well, let's just stay with this for the time being. Gary is in Caraway, Arkansas. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay. Hey, have you heard anything about the fact that, or I don't know if it's a fact or not, it's going on the internet places, and I don't know if you're aware of it or if there's any credibility to it or not, about Halliburton buying a big operation that cleans up oil about a week before that thing blew up down there?
You know, I did see something today, and also that Goldman Sachs had sold off 600,000, I think, shares in BP or something. I kind of blew right by it, but it was on, and I think
it was BP stock.
Yeah, yeah.
And it makes you wonder what kind of monsters we're dealing with, don't it?
Well, it does. And the person who sent me an email, and then I, you know, did some checking myself. And now, you know, somebody can make the argument that this is just, you know, business as usual. This is what they do. Goldman Sachs, they invest and they sell and they buy and they screw people and steal and cheat and lie. So, you know, maybe this was just a normal course of events, but there seemed to have been three or four of these events just prior to this that kind of makes you wonder, but I don't know. I have enough trouble dealing with, trying to deal with reality. But I think, right. I think there may be something there, Gary. I don't, you know, I'm at that point where I don't write off anything anymore.
Oh, I don't either. I remember when some of the people first started talking about the CIA or somebody might be involved with a twin tires collapsing.
Right.
And I thought, well, that was crazy. But, you right. know, I wonder, I don't think that's so crazy anymore.
No, and like I say, I just don't. There's a real struggle going on, and while I don't believe in, forces of evil or forces of good, I think that just by definition, a lot of people do. I'm just saying, yeah. By definition though, there's a lot of evil right now. I was telling my 6-year-old the other night, I said, well, Molly, there really aren't monsters, because she watched that movie Monsters, Inc., which is kind of a cool movie. But I said, there aren't any monsters that look like that. The monsters all look like people.
Dick Cheney would be a good example.
He would indeed. Thanks, Gary. I got a boogie. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Yeah, I know what he's talking about. I've got it somewhere on this stack of articles and stuff to bring up on the program. I will find it eventually. If you have gone to MikeMalloy.com, you saw a couple of emails there. Really vile stuff. I mean, this is the way white Christian, although I think one is Jewish, right wingers look at what I do on this program. They attack a child, a 6-year-old child. I mean, it's pretty, and I'm not unique in this. I know a lot of people get this kind of stuff from right wingers, from conservatives, from Republicans, from teabaggers, from militia types, always with the goddamn death threats, you know, always with the threats against your spouse or your child. Every single one of them that send this stuff to me is a cowardly bastard, and I understand that. You know, if ever we were to meet on the street and I knew who he was and he knew who I was, he would piss his pants and then run off into the bushes. But any of these guys, they're all like that. And you know, 99.9% of them are males. But just a couple of emails when we come back from a couple of people who have gone to our website and did read those and what they had to say. Before the hour, we're just about out of time, but I just can't get over this Ike Skelton, this Democrat from Missouri, who just absolutely got his bloomers in a wad about the don't ask, don't tell thing. Not because the law is good or bad, not because it should or should not be repealed, not because queer folk have as much of a right to go die for corporate America as non-queer folk. No. But that the word gay makes him nervous. What will the mommies and daddies talk about? And this poor old bastard, I mean, really, I sometimes feel very sorry for these older white men of a certain age who just can't handle truth that has been swirling around them all their lives, but they just chose not to see or turn their face away from. You know, just because somebody says that, like poor old Ike Skelton, doesn't necessarily mean they're a repressed or closeted homosexual person. It just means that they are unable to handle real life. I mean, real sexuality, human sexuality. I wonder what the word, you know, if Ike Skelton just gets all nervousy over the word gay or homosexual, how does he feel about the word heterosexual? That probably makes him all nervousy too. You know what I'm saying? Or what does he think about the word intercourse? You know? Or what does he think about the term oral sex? I don't know. I'm sure Ike Skelton is just a typical, you know, on the surface, a decent person, underneath just this squirming rat's nest of bigotry and idiocy. And Chris is in Albuquerque listening on Sirius. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Mike. Let me switch to off the speaker.
Okay.
Okay. Well, actually, the reason I called is what you were just talking about.
Oh, yeah?
I was in the Army, and when I was in the Army, the youngest you could be was 17, and you needed your parents' permission. And he's talking about what do the parents say to seven-year-olds. I don't believe they're taking seven-year-olds, or even, you know, 8 or 10.
Right. Well, poor old Ike Skelton doesn't even want a debate because it might wind up on C-SPAN. A little kiddies might walk into the room and go, "Mommy, Daddy, what does that mean?" You know, which a kid is inclined to do, and then poor Mommy and Daddy won't know what to do. Oh, come away from the television quick. Oh, God. You know, that's what Ike Skelton is afraid of. But you're right. You know, I don't know why sexuality of all sorts is such a weird topic in this country. I guess it has to do with our background, right?
Well, you know, that and when I was young, I had a friend who came up with an incredibly profound thought.
Yeah.
For like a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
And his thought was, are you me? No. Then I hate you. And,
okay, I'll tell you what, that is way, way zen for this hour of the night. But you know what, Chris, I'm going to think about that. Are you me? No, then I hate you. Okay, you know, that's interesting. Yeah, I got to leave it there, pal. Thank you. Thanks, Chris. Michael says more than a few hundred oil rigs in the Gulf. I think I said a few hundred. What have I got here? The Western Planning Area, which is from roughly Louisiana-Texas state line west. There are 499 active platforms. The Central Planning Area, which is roughly the same line going east to the Florida Panhandle, there are 3,359 active platforms for a grand total of almost 4,000 drilling platforms in the Gulf of Mexico. I didn't know that. Did you know that, Kathy? I had no idea. I'm not going to be able to get to these hate mails, but maybe tomorrow. From the Reuters News Agency, oil major BP believes it may be heading for a showdown with the White House over ever-increasing demands that it cover costs related to the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, a BP source said on Wednesday. The source said, quote, "At some point, a line has to be drawn," end quote. Earlier on Wednesday, U.S. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar told a Senate hearing He would ask BP to repay the salaries of any workers laid off because of the six-month moratorium on deepwater exploratory drilling imposed by the U.S. government after the spill. BP has said it will pay for the cleanup and direct damages to those affected by the spill, such as fishermen. But the source said the moratorium was a government decision, and so the costs related to it were a different matter. The company declined comment. You know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. What's going to happen is at some point here, BP is, they're going to let this mount and mount, and they're going to file for bankruptcy protection, which will effectively end any kind of payouts that they have to make. If that happens, I don't know how the law reads on this. Maybe Bruce or Michael can send me an email about this tomorrow because we're almost out of time. But maybe at that point, the U.S. government will seize the assets, the global assets of BP, and in whatever manner available, convert those assets, liquidate them, I think is the term, convert them into cash and distribute it. Although I don't think President Obama would do that, because President Obama, like his several immediate predecessors, is a corporatist, and a corporatist does not do that sort of thing. It's not sporting. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.